Luke chapter 16, beginning at verse 1. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job, and I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' 800 gallons of olive oil,' he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 400. Then he asked the second, 'And how much do you owe?' 1,000 bushels of wheat,' he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows your hearts. What is highly valued among men is detestable in the sight of God." This is the gospel of Christ.
Praise to Christ. May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, these are not the most straightforward readings today, and Bishop Peter, in his weekly column, stated that the parable of the shrewd manager is easily the most difficult parable to understand. Maybe a good preacher would therefore try to unpack this parable for the listeners. But today, at least, I'm not that good preacher. Rather, I thought I'd take the opportunity to look at parables in general and then tell you a modern parable. As we know, Jesus constantly taught in parables. But he clearly was not the first one, nor the only one ever since. Parables are normally fairly short stories that illustrate one or more ideas or principles. In contrast to fables, where animals and plants and some inanimate objects are used to illustrate points, parables have human characters. Now, the distinction between fable and parable is not always clear, and it's sometimes a bit flexible. Our first reading from the book of Judges has variously been called a fable or a parable. Well, on the definition I just gave you, it's probably more a fable. Whatever it is, it shows the good effect to which these stories can be used. Jotham, the youngest son of Gideon, who's also called Jerubbaal, wanted to speak into a very delicate situation, to say the least. If he had said that... If he had said to his audience, just right point, that they were wrong and Abimelech is a bad guy, the shutters would have just gone up like this and nobody would have listened. And so he told them a story about things they were familiar with, trees. They all knew about olive trees, fig trees and vines as well. Somehow that was also considered a tree then. They knew about the thorn bush that made their life difficult. Without explicitly saying it, Jotham indicated that Abimelech is like the thorn bush, who cannot really protect them. Of course, once the connection was made between Abimelech and the thorn bush, people may have gotten angry, but by using the story, Jotham at least was able to make the point. A story is also far more memorable than just an assertion or an idea. Jesus used parables to teach about the kingdom of God, a reality that may be difficult to understand if we are just given pure facts. He also used parables to teach particular points. The parable that we read today certainly makes people sit up. Did Jesus really say that? We wonder. And yet, maybe the main point is in verse 11. If you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? In other words, we cannot separate our faith from daily life. Our faith needs to affect how we live in the world. Okay, that's as much interpretation as I'll give of that parable. But I wonder whether in our own time and today things are happening in which we ourselves are involved in, which could be described through the use of parable. And as I thought about it, I thought I'll tell you a parable that I wrote about 17 years ago, but which when I reread it was still surprisingly topical. For a long time, a beautiful public garden was at the edge of a small town. It probably was a New Zealand town. Of course, it was modeled on other gardens, European gardens. It wasn't totally original, but it still had very much its own style, with plants from all around the world. A stream meandered through the lower parts, lined by willows and shingle banks. There were grass areas and a small forest. The upper part had ornamental trees and beds of flowers. And of course, there was the rose garden, from which the tree-lined avenue headed east. The seasons changed the face of the garden, and so did the new flowers that were planted over time and the beds of flowers that were rearranged. As far as anyone can think back, the garden was tended by the gardener living in the little cottage near the eastern edge. A subcommittee of the local council had always made the big decisions, but apart from some tree plantings, the memorial, and the re-establishment of the rose garden, no great changes had ever been made. Generally, the people of the town liked their garden. They came here for walks, for picnics and to play. Some took the occasional flower to decorate their home. Boats would often sail across the pond on new adventures, and new toys were tried out on the paths. There were occasions when the garden was the scene of something more sinister. It is known that in the old days, at least two duels were held here. It seemed one of them was fatal. And the wood used in the arson attack on the school came from the garden. For a few decades, people were not allowed to play on the lawns of the upper garden. Some still complain about that to this day, even though the committee has long ago reversed that decision and people have played on the lawns for a very long time. Recently, however, there have been some changes. Not that they were totally new and sudden, and actually similar things had happened in other gardens all across the world. The committee finally caught up with some modern trends in garden management. A few years ago, the committee decided to reassess the utility value of the garden with a view of maximizing the contribution of the garden to the social well-being of the community. A consultant was engaged for a high sum. She came to the conclusion that the garden would need to reflect the progress in design that has occurred in the wider world. As part of that progress, she suggested to address 2 points urgently: the accessibility of the gardens to visitors and risk minimization. Accordingly, the committee voted to convert one lawn area to a sealed car park and to replace many of the gravel paths with concrete lanes. To avoid any flood damage and danger to children if they played in or near the stream, a new concrete stream bed was formed. Of course, now children can no longer play alongside or in the stream, and since a fence has been put around the pond, boats no longer set out on adventures across its waters. There were voices of warning who feared that it would alter the character of the garden. Some even pointed to the experience in other gardens, where concrete stream beds had led to the death of the stream. Also, in the last 2 worldwide earthquakes, long concrete lanes everywhere had suffered major damage, and most people no longer had any confidence in that concept. But following the consultant's report, the committee stuck to their ideas. To keep up with progress, the committee decided to make the garden more attractive to young people and so show their own youthfulness, even though most of them were retired, and also their modern ideas. Therefore, a motocross track was put up in the upper gardens. The lawns disappeared, the ornamental trees were felled, and a dirt and compacted soil track was constructed. It's not the best dirt bike track, but it gets used regularly. The peace of the upper garden is, however, gone. Instead of birds, the noise of motorbikes now sounds through the evening air. Instead of blossoming trees, each spring a few weeds struggle to raise their heads. The beds of flowers were relocated to the hillside where the forest once had been. After a visitor had been sorely bruised by the thorns when he was pushed into the roses during an argument, the committee looked at the suitability of roses in public gardens. It came to the conclusion that the thorns represented a major safety hazard. Further, the thorns symbolized pain and therefore would not be acceptable in a garden whose purpose was mainly the enjoyment of the visitors. Roses, it was argued, could also be seen as symbols of romantic love. With so many elderly people who have might lost their partner and young single people visiting the gardens, it was seen as inappropriate to remind them of these romantic feelings. And if we talk about love, it was said, it should be seen more as a general state of well-being, an opening of oneself towards the other and of acceptance. Therefore, symbolically neutral flowers were to be planted instead of roses. It was decided to plant pansies. They also have the advantage that they could be ordered new and planted each spring so that no long-term care and commitment was necessary. At one meeting of the committee, a submission was made that trees lining the avenue were exotic and not native and therefore totally unnatural. It was therefore decided to fell all the trees along the avenue, especially as their leaves had created problems in autumn. Once they were felled, some native trees were planted, but the conditions proved unsuitable and the native trees could not establish themselves and soon died. One of the members of the committee walked through the garden each day and on the way to a restaurant for lunch. He noticed that he lost a minute each time because he had to go around a flower bed instead of taking the most direct route. He felt that this was an unjustified limitation of his freedom, and therefore asked the committee to look again at the public's freedom within the garden. The committee concluded that by prohibiting people to walk or drive on the flowers, their individual liberty was unduly curtailed. It therefore recommended that all signs requesting visitors not to enter flower beds should be removed at once, and that the borders of the flower beds should be more fluid. Any fences or small stone walls were therefore taken away. While some people made use of their freedom and trampled upon the flowers if they wished to, the majority of visitors still had too much respect and did not walk onto the flower beds. After some discussion, the committee decided to free the visitors from these inhibitions by removing all flower beds from the accessible areas where they may inhibit movement and to situate them in areas that were less accessible. This moderate course of action was mainly chosen due to the pressure of some people in the town who could not imagine a garden without beds or flowers. Those people also somehow thought that trampling on flowers was a destruction of beauty, not an assertion of freedom. However wrong they were in the eyes of the committee, some concessions had to be made. But even the remaining flowers made the committee uncomfortable, especially as the flowers tended to die in autumn and grew again in spring. Did this not remind them of death and violence? And what sort of gardener would that be who could accept that plants die for new life to be born? And who could guarantee that new life would come? Just 1 year back, there had been unseasonable frosts, so that some plants died as soon as the first shoots had started to come up. Had it not clearly been shown that new growth was not always possible? Who in their right mind could put their trust in such a miracle? It was therefore decided to become independent of the images of death and uncertain new growth, and to take full control of the garden decorations. The committee therefore embarked on its most ambitious project yet. A new sculpture garden was to replace the remaining flowers and trees. Famous artists from far and near contributed their work. Of course, the gardener was no longer required, as there were hardly any plants left. How long will his cottage still stand? And finally, they had achieved the garden of progress, of human self-worth. They had replaced the uncomfortable, different beauty with their own image. This garden now was truly a reflection of their own values. They had realized their freedom from restrictions, their freedom from care. Now the wind sweeps between the sculptures, and now and then a lonely visitor is seen among them. The laughter of children playing has not been heard there for a very long time. The only laughter left is nervous and sinister, that of disillusioned youngsters spraying graffiti over the concrete walls. I grieve for the garden. I miss the beauty. I feel sorry for the people who no longer have a place to go. But I do not give up hope. Flowers will grow again. They will push their way through the concrete slowly and one by one. They might get trampled, but there will be more, and I'm sure the old gardener will take care of them. It might not be in the garden, but on the roadsides and in the backyards. I'm confident that the church will go on, but maybe in new places.